Hello, and welcome to the Big Four Transparency Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Giles Pearson, co-founder of Accountests and a former partner at PwC. Welcome to the pod, Giles.
Hi, Dom. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I've seen you all over the place. You know, we did a lot of those kind of air roundtables together. And we're kind of operating, you know, not too dissimilar of businesses when it comes to kind of working in the accounting space. So obviously, I'm incredibly happy to know you on that front. But I think what you're doing is really interesting and very, very valuable for the industry as well. So maybe to kick us off, can you talk to us a little bit about what Accountests does?
Sure. So, you know, look, my background, as you say, was with PwC. I was a tax and private business partner. And, you know, one of the struggles that we had was going through a hiring process and ending up with people who, you know, who didn't end up having the attributes that were on the tin that we bought, if you like. So, you know, those disappointments that firms have all the time of, you know, they go through a hiring process, they hire somebody who looks like they can do the role as a, you know, whatever it is, tax manager, audit senior. And then when they're in the role, it's, you know, they're going, well, this is not what I was expecting. So what Accountests does in that hiring space is help firms understand what it is that they're getting. So does this person have the technical skills that I need? So we have a series of skills tests across tax, audit, and CAS to help people work out whether this person's in my ballpark. And then personality and cognitive ability as well. So tests specific for accounting. So how are they going to fit with my team? How do I get the best out of this person? Do they have the raw intellectual capability to learn fast and problem solve? So that's really, I guess, in a nutshell, is what Accountests set out to do. We've moved a little bit into development. So on the personality side, we can now help firms, again, using personality profiles to help develop their emerging leaders, for example, or look at their team structure and how different people in the teams make decisions, work together, you know, get jobs done together. So it's really about giving some science behind, you know, making decisions and allowing firms to make those decisions fast. And with the confidence that they're going to, you know, get what they expect.
Mm-hmm. I actually didn't know that you were like involved post-hiring as well. I think that that's really valuable and cool because, I think there's some difficulties in having like personality type testing in the hiring process necessarily. Some people are a little bit against that, but afterwards it can be super valuable. So when I was at Deloitte, they had this and it was split up into like Guardian, Pioneer, Driver, and Integrator. And I kind of like when I did the test, I sort of found myself at like the far end of the spectrum, kind of opposite to a lot of the other people at the firm. And I was like, oh, this like explains some dynamics. And while, you know, it's a little bit of like blanket statements, it's still interesting to know for sure.
And I think the challenge in the firms is, you know, there's quite a few firms who are using these sorts of tools. The challenge is to get the value out of them. So, you know, they provide some personal information for you as a, you know, as an individual. And I'm sure when you did that, you not only could understand why maybe you didn't fit in the way that other people did, but it also helps you to think about, you know, what are the things I need to work on to get my career to go? What are the areas where, you know, maybe my conscientiousness is less than others, so I need to think about, you know, following rules, not just dismissing processes because they're, you know, because the firm says I need to do this and I don't, you know, I don't buy into that. It's like, okay, that's, you know, I need to think about that. Or, you know, developing relationships. That may be a struggle, often is a struggle for accountants. So what am I going to do? How am I going to get to the point where I can work through that? And, you know, even though this is not my comfortable place, how do I go about developing relationships if it's not something that I'm super comfortable with? And you know, there are techniques and things that people can learn, and the people who do well at learning that are the ones who are going to make it through to become firm owners or successes out in industry. You know, it's and those who can never learn it or refuse to engage with that are going to struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And so like with those kind of ongoing tests, maybe for people who are still in firms, I assume there's probably some sort of like plan to have a path towards, like, how do you bridge those remaining skill gaps, or how do you kind of make up for some of those weaknesses within the firm?
Yeah, look, and I guess what we try and do is provide the science for the firms to sort of what is the current state of play look like, and then what we will encourage the firms to do, and most firms are doing this anyway, is if you're a manager or senior manager director going through on a sort of a pathway to partnership, you should have a mentor. It may be a current firm owner, it may be somebody that the firm's brought in from outside to help you. What we do can really help both the coachee and the coach to have some discussions around, you know, here's where we thought we were at. Here's some more objective information that says, hey, you know, you might need to think about your coping strategies and how you cope with stress, because what you're telling us is that this is something that you struggle with. Okay, what are some mechanisms? What are some training opportunities that we can, or some coping mechanisms that we can build in? And if you're working with your coach on a monthly basis, then that's about saying, well, let's try this. You've got these meetings coming up or this event coming up. Let's try some of these strategies. What are we learning? At getting better as we go along. And often those things are sometimes hard to just sort of, where do you start? And I guess what our testing gives you is somewhere to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And then like when you were doing this kind of hiring, where were you seeing the skill gap most of the time? Like, was it mostly kind of at the senior level? Was it at the manager level? Like, where were you seeing it that, like, when you were hiring people from one firm to the next, there might have been things lacking?
So, well, I guess when you talk about skills, if we're talking about technical skills, the bell curve of capability absolutely applies. And, you know, we do get some comments around for our tests. Some of our tests are at CPA level. And people sometimes go to us, oh, they're a CPA, I don't need to test them. You know, they've already shown that they have, you know, high-level skills. Well, I can tell you that that's not necessarily the case. And the bell curve applies, and there are some CPAs out there who probably shouldn't be. And that doesn't mean they didn't pass the exam. What that means is that they've probably ended up in a position where they're using a very narrow range of what they've learned, and they've, you know, a lot of the other skills that they had have passed by. And so then when they're going for another role, it's like this is not stuff that they now have the capability of. So, you know, you see the full gambit. You know, in many roles, looking at somebody's resume is a start of, you know, they're going for a staff accountant role, let's see what they've been doing. But, you know, the reality is with AI and with the fact that, you know, 85% of people lie on their resumes, as CPA Practice Advisor has told us, you know, your only way of checking these things is to actually use a process yourself to actually discover where they're really at. And yeah, do you want to waste 15 minutes of a 40-minute interview trying to find that out, or do you sort of push that to one side and go, we can get a real deep dive into this and then use that information at interview? So it's you know, it's about trying to make sense of and speed up that whole process.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I mean, that's obviously so valuable, especially with the talent market where it is today, where it's so hard to get the right kind of talent, right? So, and then like in your experience at the firm, like when you had the idea to do this, obviously it was due to some unsuccessful hires. What was like the rate of like new hires that, you know, you would say were kind of problematic or maybe had a very significant skill gap that you kind of had wished you had identified?
Yeah, look, I don't have those numbers from my PwC days. We have surveyed our clients in the meantime, and you know what they're telling us is that it's around 25%. So of people who heavy than you know should never have been hired, or it's been a bad, poor experience for them. So you know, look at it. But accounting firms will often just suck all of this up, and they often don't want to confront the issues, if you like. So what they do is they manage it, and you know, look, in the end, these people may well work out okay, but it's how many thousands and thousands of dollars have you spent in the meantime going through the process of discovering that they didn't have what you needed, and then the mental anguish for the team and for the partner and for the employee themselves of having this, you know, you're not performing discussion. Wouldn't it be way better?
Yeah, it goes both ways, right? Like you don't want to be hired into a role if it's just going to be like, hey, like why don't you know this, right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask on that front, like, are there resources as well for, you know, the employee who maybe went through a hiring process and, you know, didn't do well on the technical exam? Like, do you have your own resources that employee could maybe go to, or places that you would maybe recommend?
Yeah, look, that's been a constant question, I guess. We don't have the resources. It's training is not something that we're trying to do. And, you know, a lot of the firms have training providers that they work with. The challenge, which we still haven't got the answer to, is linking up the results of the testing directly to modules of, you know, this is what you therefore need the training on. And part of the challenge with that is, you know, in a 40 question, 40 minute test for a staff accountant, you are asking a whole range of questions. So you can't really deduce what somebody's training needs are in particular areas from that. What you can tell is, in a broad sense, you know, are they in the, you know, bottom quartile, top quartile, or somewhere in the middle? But do they need training on accruals versus training on, you know, year-end adjustments or whatever? There's not enough data points to really tell you that in any certainty. And, you know, I think it is a struggle to find those linkages. We've, I guess, if you like, left that to the firms to work that out. We have done a bit more work at that sort of bookkeeper and QuickBooks level. So we do tests for bookkeepers and QuickBooks users. So those links, I think, are better. And there's some great training materials out there for bookkeepers and for QuickBooks. But if you're going a bit further up the scale, you know, if you're looking for tax, for example, you know, there's obviously a lot of tax training providers out there. And to be honest, we leave that to the firms to work with whoever is their current provider with that.
Okay, interesting. And then, like, obviously for you to have left your old job to do this, like, you know, you identified this as being like a major, major pain point in the industry. Can you talk to me about what that was like? Like, you were a partner at PwC. So by all accounts, for someone following, you know, the accountant typical path, like, you had made it, you were done, right? Like, you just,
yes, sir.
You were at the top and you were just going to kind of keep doing what you were doing. And so, first of all, like, what was that like in your head to kind of like make that decision of like, okay, I made it, you know, by all accounts, and then have decided to kind of leave to pursue this thing. What was that mentality like?
It was probably a little the other way around, to be fair. So I was a partner quite young, I guess, in PwC sense. So I was I came in just after my 31st birthday. So that's pretty young these days.
Oh, wow.
So I always said that when my youngest child left school, I was going to quit because, you know, while they're at school, you're pretty much tied down to, you know, being around the same place and you know, being at home or most of the time. So when my youngest finished school, I was 49, and it was like, I'm out of here. So that was a decision I'd made actually, you know, earlier on. And 18 years as a partner is enough. And if you've been relatively prudent, from a financial point of view, then you are, I wouldn't say you're set for life, but it's, you know, you don't have to worry too much about, you know, ongoing income. So really, I guess I had decided to leave, and then this issue sort of was bubbling along, through those last two or three years I was there. And it was like, here's something that I can carry on with as a post PwC. It was almost a hobby when we started it. And for the first two or three years, it was literally a few hours a week, and then it grew legs. And we said, well, actually, if we're going to do this properly, we sort of need to get serious. So, at the same time, we decided if we wanted to get serious, we needed to get serious in the US, which is obviously the biggest accounting market. And for us, you know, we needed to succeed in the US to succeed as a company. So that's why we've spent a lot of time there, and I've spent a lot of time in the US market, and when you look at the testing we've got, the US testing is by far the broadest of everything we have.
Yeah, for sure. And then, like, how much of a difference do you think it made that you had been like an accounting firm leader now building kind of solutions for other accounting firms? Because we're starting to see, I would say probably at an increasing rate, people from outside of our industry trying to kind of come in, bring solutions in. And some of them, I mean, are just really technically heavy. So that's probably the case. Like, I don't think like a CPA with a tool is going to build, you know, Canopy or whatever, right? Like at some point you maybe need like external kind of real tech people. How much do you think that helped?
Yeah, and you know, look, we're not really a tech firm as such. We're tech enabled. So we use a third party testing platform, because that is a serious piece of technology which we decided we didn't want to build. And it has proctoring and all the stuff in it. So these are tools that are way beyond what we were wanting. That wasn't the problem we were trying to solve. You know, look, being a former firm owner certainly opens doors. It doesn't lead to a slam dunk in terms of making a sale, but when you start talking to people about their recent hiring experiences, especially when you're talking to the firm owners or the senior leadership of the firms, and you know, they all roll their eyes and start telling you about, you know, the issues that they've had. We can sympathize with each other. So that's, from that point of view, you know, we're very much on the same page. In terms of translating that into them using the tool, that's a longer discussion because, you know, you will know as well, these firms are running at 100 miles an hour all the time, or they feel they are, and they, mm-hmm. and they're, in terms of their bandwidth to do something that is different, you have to be patient. And I've learned a lot about patience in the last 5 years or so, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm in the learning to be patient phase right now, right? Where it's, hey, come on, like, you have a problem, I have the answer. And then, some I think, just feel very underwater, which I think is, you know, in itself a huge problem in the accounting industry. And you know, every solution provider is looking to kind of help alleviate that in a certain way. But The problem still obviously is there that people feel this way. And then, yeah, some places are really resistant to change, which can be tricky as well, right? So you need to get kind of the open-minded people or the growth-minded people on board as well, which, you know, unfortunately, sometimes seems like it's a little bit hard to find. So, yeah. I had one more. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So I was just going to say, I think, you know, from the meetings, I was in down the East Coast in January and talking to a lot of firms. And, you know, one of the things that really struck me was that they're at this tipping point where selling time is starting to decline because what they're starting to sell is technology solutions. And it's not that they're resisting that, but it's a really, really hard transition because the mindset of accounting is all about, you know, if I'm working on a client's tax affairs or you know, audit or whatever, I'm making money. And so when I'm not working on a client issue, I'm not making money. Yet, as you're increasingly selling technology, you've got to start to work not on your business, or sorry, not in your business, but on your business and, you know, developing those tech stacks and working out how you integrate, you know, maybe AI solutions into and how you bill for that is, and I think firms are really struggling with that. And they're, you know, I don't think they're nowhere near through that journey. That's just starting, but I think it's going to cause a lot of headaches for firm owners as they try and move away from hourly billing to solution focused billing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that obviously kind of ties into like skill testing, right? Where it's like, well, if it's just billable hours is what we're worried about. Anyone can bill an hour, right? Mm. But as there becomes more and more kind of pressure on what are you accomplishing during said billable hour and what is the output, then it becomes obviously increasingly important to hire people who are at least close to being where they need to be actually a fully ramped productive employees, right?
Oh, look, that's right. And, you know, it's the technical skills are obviously still really important, but the ability to communicate those what you're learning, you know, AI can do all the technical stuff if you ask it the right questions. You know, where accountants still have value is asking the right questions and being able to assimilate the technical answer to the client situation and communicate that in a way that the client sees extra value, because otherwise the client may as well just ask AI themselves for the answer. So, you know, that's where I think that combination of technical capability and your ability to, you know, develop relationships is so critical. And yeah, firms, you know, if you hire somebody who doesn't have the technical capability, then how are you going to put them in front of a client? Because that's the bit that you're going to be able to bill for. And that's the challenge that all the firms are facing, is how do we bring these people out of college, say, and turn them into advisors in a much, much shorter time frame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, in the most immediate kind of term, I would say is like the presence of offshoring and nearshoring and things like that has really decreased that time period where it's like, okay, you actually need to be a relationship owner, right? Because I think a lot of the work of like, okay, preparing the personal returns and, you know, doing that first step of preparation is getting kind of gnawed away at. And so, yeah, the need now is, yeah, can you be the subject matter expert and or own this relationship or review files and give final sign off, which is, again, is a pretty rapidly evolving thing. Mm. And we'll see probably just that's going to continue to happen, right? More and more of the process is going to get eaten away at. And so we're going to need people doing kind of those later end tasks that maybe you would only be doing in year 3 or 4 as early as possible if they're going to be productive, you know, contributors to the firm, versus being, well, they're in their learning phase. They're not necessarily like contributing to the firm, which is not a great place to be, especially from like a salary perspective. You don't really have a lot of kind of pull there versus if you're actually contributing in a real profit center at that point, then that's going to kind of help you along. One of the points I meant to ask about earlier too, with you leaving PwC, not only is kind of being partner at a very large firm, obviously like a lot of people's kind of end goal and, you know, the aspirational area to arrive at as an accountant, but it seems to me outside looking in that the partner model is also very kind of restrictive in terms of ability to move away, right? So there's the golden handcuffs of it all, but then there's also the fact that, like, in theory, you may have bought into the equity of a firm. I know in Canada and the US, there's like the whole kind of partner pension type of thing. Like, how did that look like for you leaving?
You know, and I can't speak for the Canadian or the US model, but in New Zealand, I think they had it about right, which was you it costs you nothing to get in, and you get nothing when you leave. So it's all about picking the right people. So there's no financial requirement for you to be, you know, to be a partner. There's no requirement for you to, you know, have any equity to put in. And you're not then paying out pensions out of current income, which is, you know, extremely difficult. And if you've got a funded pension scheme, then great. But I suspect, you know, that's very hard in a model where when it's expanding, everything is great. If the partner numbers are going up, then, you know, paying out prior partners out of income is fine. The moment numbers start to come down, the whole thing can get squeezed really, really fast. So, you know, I think the PwC New Zealand model was good. The challenge with that model, though, is about investing in the future. And that was certainly something they were grappling with. And I don't know if that has been solved in the meantime. But, you know, if you basically pay out 100% of current income each year, how do you invest for the longer term? How do you create passive income, for example, which is what all the firms are trying to achieve, is you know, developing products which create an ongoing income stream that, again, is not a billable hour thing. So yeah.
And nobody like holds equity, which has the possibility of increasing in value based off of investments in future growth. So everyone on board is basically incentivized to just maximize partner distributions year over year. Which I've talked about as being like a huge issue, and where I think private equity deals actually make sense, right? Where it's like, well, if you're stuck and like the equity holders just want to maximize distributions, and it's really hard to reinvest in the firm. And bring kind of new technology, invest in the right talent, stuff like that. But that is interesting, though. It's cool that you kind of got the ability to sort of just, right, like set out, do your path in life and decide, you know, now's time to try something different. And like that decision to retire at like 49 or 50 years old from this firm, like, was that independent of having the next project? Was that like always the plan?
Always the plan. Yeah.
Okay. I know. And was that like a result of burnout, or was that like from point A, like, I just want to prioritize these things?
You know, look, when I became a partner, that clearly wasn't in my thinking, because you're just getting started. But 5 years out, five years from when I left, I made that decision. I guess really because there's more to life than, you know, PwC is a hard taskmaster. Nobody's going to say it's a walk in the park being a partner. And it's like, well, you know, there's a trade-off then at some point. How much longer do you keep working versus trying to achieve some other things in your life that you want to do? And, you know, I guess I was lucky that I had good health and wasn't a big spender. Some of the partners are big spenders and they have to keep working. But that wasn't us. And so, yeah, I had that flexibility and decided, yeah, at 49, I've done a whole lot of hiking and biking and climbing mountains and all this sort of stuff, along with the account test story. So, you know, I'm pretty happy that I had the opportunity to make that choice. And, you know, look, I I was very lucky that I had that chance. But having made the partnership thing, it's like, well, you know, how do we make the most out of that? And for me, that wasn't working until I was 60.
Mm-hmm. And in every conversation I've had with you, you've been super upbeat, like just a happy guy. So, I mean, I'm really happy for you that worked out. And, you know, I love what you're up to with AccountTests. It's cool to see someone, you know, taking on some of those gnarlier problems and you know, helping bring the industry forward. So I'm going to make sure I link AccountTests in the podcast notes, because I do think there are definitely some kind of firm runners listening who might, you know, want to consider this as part of their hiring process, especially with talent being as hard to acquire and retain as it is these days. So I'll make sure to link that. But yeah, thank you so much, Giles, for taking the time. And yeah, I really appreciate our conversation. And just kind of your whole outlook on all of this is very refreshing. It's very kind of like, you know, you made the profession work for you rather than feel like you had to do what everyone says, you know, is the path and the way to go. So yeah.
Thanks, Dom. I really appreciate it. And it's great talking to you. And I really love the work that you're doing as well. And I think for the profession, you know, these are the tools that can help firms just be more nimble and, you know, stop trying to reinvent the wheel all the time. So, you know, I think you and I are both doing, are both part of that solution for them when they want to pick that up.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll take the virtual high five there. And thank you so much, Giles. And I'll definitely stay tuned on what you're up to next. Thanks, Tom.